always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Thursday. Well, it's Friday my time, but Thursday night by you guys. Raj went to cover the game in person. And, you know, seeing as it was a road game, technically, it makes it kind of difficult for him to come back and, you know, come on the show with me. So I'm going to be rolling with you guys solo. Interesting game for a few reasons. One, that the Lakers kind of climbed back into it, right? Definitely climbed back into it. Really fun comeback. Looked like, you know, for a couple moments there that like maybe, just maybe, they would pull this one out. It was one of those classic Phil Jackson, like, if you're going to come back from in this kind of a game, you'd better get the lead the first chance that you get kind of games. And the Lakers didn't. And the Clippers were able to figure it out from there. But I thought there were aspects of the comeback that were interesting, most notably that DeAndre Ayton was not a part of that comeback and that he was just outright benched and then probably subtweeted by J.J. Redick after the game when he talked about how many free agents that the Lakers have on their roster right now. So that was interesting. Obviously, the fallout from the Genie Bus family LeBron thing has been interesting as well. So maybe we'll talk about that over the course of the show. But really, I think I'm going to lean on you guys here. This was really fun in that on offside, I watched this game with, you know, in the chat with those guys rather than kind of live tweet it on Twitter. And so, by the way, if you guys are interested in joining Pete and Raj and me and Damon in there, offside.gg is the place to go to check out how you can pop into that chat. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting in that, like, the Lakers opened up well, fell behind by way too much, climbed back into it, had opportunities. Some of the energy levels from various guys and from certain guys really in this game was certainly interesting as well. So a lot really to talk about from this game, and I'm going to lean on your guys's comments and questions over the course of it as well. So get those in as soon as you can. And yeah, let's dive on in. A quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button. If you guys are new around these parts, if you guys are watching from Twitter, the place to find the show and be able to tune in live is on youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere works for me. And then get your 5-star reviews on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to the show. 5-star reviews or positive reviews really help. But especially on iTunes, because that's still the biggest podcast platform out there. All right, let's talk about some of the specifics of this game. 112-104 was the final here. The Lakers fall to 26-17. The Clippers improve to 20-24. In terms of statistical individual performances, Luka led the way with 32 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists. Only had the one turnover, but really oddly was a game worse, minus 17 in this game. I have a couple of explanations for that that we might get to over the course, or that we will get to over the course of the show. For the Clippers, pretty balanced effort, right? You had Kawhi leading the way. He had 24 points. Harden had 18 points, but also dished out 10 assists, had 7 boards to go with that as well. Ivica Zubac, frankly, dominated this game from the center position. He had 18 points and 19 rebounds. He finished with 10 offensive rebounds. That's probably why DeAndre Ayton was eventually benched. And eventually the Lakers were like, you know what? Zubac is killing us to such an extent inside that we'll just go really small and see if we can impact the game that way, and found some success doing so. Jared Vanderbilt was a plus 16 in a game that the Lakers lost by 8. I think that's pretty telling of how poorly the Lakers centers played in this game. But yeah, I would say that like the starting point, also LeBron played, you know, pretty well by his standards, 23 points on 9 of 19 from the floor, 5 boards, 6 assists, a couple steals, 4 turnovers though in this one, finished a minus 7. As far as like individual performances, honestly, like the most impactful player on the court was Zubac. He was just incredible. He had a really good flop late in the game too. When he was, you know, he kind of walked himself under the rim and then did that thing where it's like, oh, I don't have a chance at the ball, so I'm just going to jump forward and yell really loud. And that created an extra possession that led to, I think, John Collins getting to the free throw line. But yeah, it was you know, the Lakers, I thought, started the game with good intensity. Then they went zone. Then they brought in Gabe. And that combination of playing kind of a passive defense and then bringing in the smallest player on your roster is just tough. Like, it's just not very... it's not very appealing as a rotation and as an approach. It's really difficult to go zone against a player as good as James Harden is, because not only can he shoot over the top of the zone, but then you also have lob threats on that roster with John Collins. And Harden was able to find some guys kind of sneaking behind the backside of the zone. And the Lakers like just really kind of leaked points during those moments. And honestly, like in general, whenever the Lakers go zone, it never feels like they're all that confident in it. And it's like, all right, we're going to show you this as a front. It's like a zone veneer where they like show it as a front. And then as soon as, you know, the team that they're playing against runs anything to beat the zone, they then fall back into a man defense, which is kind of an interesting curveball to throw, because the team that you're playing against would run a zone breaker and then have to go to a man offense as well. So it's like, I wouldn't go completely away from that approach, especially on sideline or baseline out of bounds kind of situations on occasion. But I don't think that the Lakers zone is as effective as it needs to be to run it as frequently as they do, as like a defense that they call out and run for multiple possessions in a row. I don't think the coaching staff has been very good in implementing it. I don't think the guys really believe in it very much. And just in general, it's just not a very effective defense. And I'm going to go back and rewatch at some point, but it felt in the moment like the Lakers kind of started letting go of the rope. And the beginning point of them doing so was going zone. And, you know, between that and Gabe, it's just such a disaster. Like, Austin needs to come back, frankly, to get rid of the Gabe minutes. Like, if you swap out Gabe Vincent's minutes for Austin Reeves in this one, the Lakers probably win this game. And I honestly think that has to be the move whenever Austin comes back. And Gabe just should be a break glass in case of emergency type of player, depending on, you know, what the injury situation might be from that point moving forward. But yeah, I just thought like that was kind of the frustrating moments. And while the Lakers were losing the lead, my problem with zone in professional basketball and really in all of basketball, but especially in professional basketball, is zone, much like a switching defense, just kind of puts defenders or players on the court into a very passive attitude. You know, all right, we're going to switch here. I'm not going to look to fight over the screen. I'm not going to look to, you know, make this player work hard to get the switch that they're looking for. You know, somebody comes into my zone, I'm going to pay attention to them. And then I'm not going to pay attention to them, depending on like how quickly they get out of my zone. And then, you know, with rebounding, especially because in like college and in high school, if you run a 2-3 zone, you can have somebody just camp out in the key. And it's still a little bit more difficult to box out and rebound in a zone in high school and in college. But in the pros, it's especially difficult to rebound, defensive rebound, in a zone, because you have that 3 second in the key thing, and like you're paying attention to that. You're paying attention to the weak side. Most teams, when they see zone, put as many shooters out on the court as they possibly can. So you're focused on the 3-point line as well. Like if you are just religiously committed to a zone in the NBA, you have a decent chance or an okay chance at not sucking in those moments. Like Miami runs a really tough zone from time to time that like you watch them play and you're like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see why this zone is effective. But if you run a zone and the starting point is like, please don't knock down too many 3-pointers, you're in trouble. And that's kind of the way that the Lakers zone has looked to this point. So I thought going zone, bringing in Gabe, Drew, and I didn't think they played Drew Timmy nearly enough in this game. Jackson Hayes was really bad. DeAndre Ayton was really bad. And then, you know, down the stretch of the game, after the Lakers had kind of clawed back into the game, Rui missed a few open shots. Marcus Smart missed a wide open three in the corner. And like your margin for error in climbing back into a game when you put yourself down by like 25, 26 points, your margin for error is as thin as Harrison's hair. And the Lakers just weren't able to take care of business. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick look at some of the individual performances in this one. I'm going to start with Luka, because if you're just reading the box score in the morning, you're going to be like, damn, 32 points, that seems good. 11 boards, that seems good. 8 assists, that's good. 3 steals, so he was trying on defense as well. Okay, like you would think this would be one of those dominant Luka performances, but his shot diet and his shot efficiency in this one was really pretty substandard by his standards. Now, like I will say that, you know, most players, you know, you go 32, 11, and 8. By most players' standards, you're like, that's a pretty damn good game. But by Luka Doncic standards, efficiency is also going to matter as well, given how much he has the ball in his hands. And the Lakers, for a long time, like they scored 18 points in the second quarter. And you had 29 points to the 36 that the Clippers scored in the second quarter or in the first quarter. So, like, you know, Luka played the entire first quarter, was absolutely cooking in that first quarter, did a lot of his damage in that first quarter, and then really kind of fell off and, like, never really looked very comfortable on the basketball court, most noticeably in, like, the very, very last chance that the Lakers had at like, maybe making the Clippers sweat a little bit. They got, Jared Vanderbilt had a pretty miraculous steal there at half court. Ball finds its way to Luka, and he dribbles up to the three-point line. He's wide open. Every Clipper fan in the arena is like, fuck, 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 fuck. You know, like, no, 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 no. And then he doesn't shoot. He didn't shoot it. He thought that there was going to be some back pressure. Didn't look very comfortable. Didn't look very confident. Passed the ball up. Got the ball back. Shot a now actually contested three-pointer. Missed it. And the game was over. Game was already over before then. But I'm just using this to kind of highlight that I didn't think he was very comfortable out there. But yeah, he shot 11 of 27 from the field. That is really poor by his standards. And he went 3 of 13 from three-point range. And look, if that is the engine of your offense, then your offense is broken. You know, then it's going to be really difficult to survive that kind of inefficient performance. Playing against a team that was clicking as balanced as the Clippers were clicking. Now look, most nights, you know, you don't worry about it too much. And like, you would think that, like, you know, especially like if the Lakers have Austin in there for the minutes that Gabe was playing tonight, they win this game. Like, just I you know, that's a good enough production line from Luka, even if it's inefficient. And LeBron played well enough that, like, if Austin goes out there and plays an average game, then the Lakers wind up winning this game. Maybe it takes a different path than the than this one did. But, like, you know, I thought that the Lakers gave themselves ample opportunity, even after digging themselves that 25, 26 point hole. I thought that the Lakers gave themselves opportunities to win this thing. And if you have opportunities to win this thing and you've dug yourself a 25, 26 point hole, then that would indicate, you know, getting your second or third best player back would give yourself a pretty good chance at winning that game most nights against that team. But still, that was the case. And I thought it was really interesting down the stretch of the game, down the home stretch of the game, that it was actually LeBron being kind of the thrust of the offense. And Luka was playing a lot more off of the ball. The Lakers were going to that LeBron like flare screen action that on one play got Vando a dunk, and then on another play got LeBron an and one. And they were going to that quite a bit. You know, and it kind of makes sense because the Clippers were putting Kawhi on Luka. So you're like, okay, well, if you're going to do that, like, let's take Kawhi out of the play and let's run offense on this side of the court, the opposite side of the court. And the Lakers were, you know, pretty effective doing that. And I think they'd be even more effective with Austin out there on the court. So there was a lot to kind of, like, you know, piece through, and I can't wait to rewatch this one, you know, with a little clearer eyes on, you know, all right, here's what this guy finished with. What actually was going on there? Because the other thing too that drove me nuts, I know this isn't like a Luka specific point, but another thing that was happening throughout this game that was driving me nuts was, like, man, how many layups are you going to miss? Like, Vando missed like three or four layups. Luka missed a couple of bunnies. Jackson Hayes missed a couple of floaters that he has been making recently. The Lakers shot 13 of 18 from the free throw line. It was an annoying game, and that, like, you know, you would, the Lakers got to within 2 points of this game, and you're like, damn it, if Vando made like half of his layups, the Lakers would be winning. And I'm just like, they're layups, dude. And, like, you know, there were a couple of them were wide open. Gabe missed a layup. And you know, Ayton missed a couple of bunnies as well. it was just one of those annoying games. And I kind of want to give the Lakers a little bit of credit to kind of climbing back into it, but it's also kind of annoying to lose to little brother. So what do you do? All right, I'm going to dive on into some of your guys' questions and comments over the course of the show, which means I will start with the most important sound that we have on this here channel. Fuck Washington! All right, first and foremost, Laker Pride 6189 writes, honestly, at this point, I have more confidence in having Stevie Wonder describe my outfit than describe my outfit than watching Marcus Smart take a three. Dude, he had that, you know, he had a corner three right in front of us, right? Like, you know, for those of us who were watching from home, he had a near side corner three. He was wide open. And it was like, I think it was like a 4-point game when he took it, or maybe a 5-point game when he took it. And you're like, please, not confident, but like, please, please go in. And he wound up, you know, clanking it. And you're just, and then, you know, the ball kind of farts out. Clippers go the other way. And I think they get a bucket, if not an and one. And you're like, ugh. That's annoying. There was another weird play, a weird review in this one, where Marcus should have been shooting free throws. The Clippers challenged the play, and then the referees decide that Marcus fouled whoever, the guy, what's his name? Jordan Miller. They decide that Marcus fouled Jordan Miller on the rebound beforehand. And my question is, like, how far back do those can those reviews go? Because, like, if you're saying, all right, we're going to basically analyze the entire possession before the attempt that a foul was called on, then you can find a foul on basically any play to decide the outcome of any review that you want. So it was really weird. Like, normally the comparison that I would kind of draw here is in the NFL. Once a possession starts, you cannot, you know, challenge a play any longer. Right. And in the NBA, possessions aren't as clear cut, or, like, you know, plays aren't as clear cut. But to me, once you've moved on from the previous call, you can't use that previous call to overturn a shot that just takes place. Cause like by this standard, a player can get absolutely decked on a 3-point opportunity, but if a moving screen led to that player taking that three, then it wouldn't matter if that player got decked on an open three. And if you're refereeing in a Golden State Warriors game and Steph Curry gets decked on a three, but he's coming off of a Draymond Green screen, then chances are that screen was illegal. And I don't know if the league really wants to open that can of worms. So that was a really weird call, kind of a crucial one, right? Because it was a 4-point swing. You go from Marcus Smart shooting two free throws to the Clippers shooting two free throws on the other end. It was really weird. But now, like, Laker Pride, I agree with you 100%. Marcus's offense has just completely fallen off of a cliff. The Lakers really miss Austin in this specific regard, especially with Jake LaRavia in the starting lineup, providing some of the defensive energy that the Lakers were missing while Rui was starting. So we did see Austin with a fresh haircut, a lot of fresh haircuts on that Lakers roster tonight, getting ready for that Amazon Prime game, getting ready for the long road trip. But I did, you know, send a couple of texts out like, hey, Austin's got this fresh haircut. there was that, you know, JJ Redick talking about Austin maybe being available by the end of this road trip. Or how close are we getting? And it is one of those things that, you know, the Lakers are pretty happy about Austin's progress to this point. So hopefully, you know, before too long, the Lakers will be getting Austin Reaves back. Because, yeah, Marcus's offense is just, I want to take a hot spoon to my eyeballs watching him play. All right, next question here comes from Gorilla the Conqueror. Luka was bad at the end. SMH, shaking my head. Vando and Smart, though. I think it's notable that pretty consistently this year, the guys who play with a lot of energy tend to have the better impact numbers than the guys who provide the theoretical spacing that they provide. Now, maybe there are some numbers that would indicate that like Gabe was a positive influence, or maybe there are some numbers that would indicate that Rui has been positive and stuff like that. My thing is, when I watch the Lakers play, I really like the amount of energy that, you know, like even granted what I just said about Smart in the previous segment, that notwithstanding, I think the Lakers do, like before he got healthy, the Lakers really missed his, you know, give a bleep. And I think, and I know that this is like, this has become the official stat of the Lakers lounge is give a bleep. But I think, you know, Vando getting out there and like really what it is, and I said this the other day, basically the Lakers, when Luka and LeBron or Austin or some combination of two of those three are out there or more, what the Lakers need are guys who either finish possessions, create extra possessions, or stop the other team from creating extra possessions for themselves. And that possession battle is going to basically dictate how effective the Lakers are going to be on a game-by-game basis. And I think Marcus Smart helps you, you know, limit the number of possessions that the other team has, and on occasion will generate a couple of extra possessions by turning the other team over. Vando, when he's really going out there, right? Like when he's really on it, generates a couple of extra possessions with some offensive rebounding or some tip out type plays, limits the other team's possessions or generates extra possessions defensively by being the nuisance that he can be. The problem with Vando is that like he just doesn't finish possessions, right? And what the Lakers really, really need, And at some point we'll actually, you know, see this maybe before I die, but the Lakers desperately need one, if not hopefully several players who check all of those boxes, right? Who can knock down an open three when they get them, right? Rui knocks down open threes, but doesn't help you in the possession battle. Jake Laravia helps you in the possession battle, not consistent enough as a three-point shooter. You know, you just have this desperate need across the Lakers roster, and hopefully, whether it's at this trade deadline or this upcoming offseason, hopefully the Lakers start thinking about it in those terms so that, you know, eventually they can start winning on more of the margins, because I also thought that Luka wasn't very good at the end of the game. I also thought that Luka was probably not very good at the end of the game because he didn't have the ball enough at the end of the game. But the Lakers desperately need a player, one player who does all of those things, limits the other team's possessions, generates extra possessions, and finishes possessions. You look back at those 2018, 2019, or the 2019 and 2020 team, You had Dwight, who limited the other team's possessions because he was a great defensive rebounder and anchor of the defense. He finished possessions as a lob threat when he was feeling good and generated extra possessions by tipping the ball out from the offensive boards. You had Anthony Davis checking all of those boxes. You had Danny Green checking all of those boxes. You had Alex Caruso checking all of those boxes. Even Kyle Kuzma was checking those boxes. So, like, when you kind of go back and you find and you look at that 2019-2020 team and you see the extent to which they frankly dominated a lot of those playoffs, like, that's probably why. The reason why is that LeBron and AD were incredible, but also they had role players that checked all of those three boxes, and they had several of them. And this team, basically, since the Russell Westbrook trade, has not had anybody who checks, any role players who checks all three of those boxes. All right, Justin Tindall writes, so sick of this shit. 2 years under Ham now. Now year two with JJ. What's changed is absolutely nothing. Hope Walter changes coaches and GM after the season. I don't know that I would bet on that. Look, if the Lakers like miss the playoffs, then yeah, I would say there's a pretty decent chance that you know, one of GM or head coach are swapped out. If they are swept in the first round, maybe some of those conversations take place as well. But again, at the end of the day, the person who has final say over this is Jeannie Buss, and she fired her entire family to ensure that this inner circle remains intact. So probably gonna get a lot more leeway for those guys than Lakers fans probably want. Ah, God. I like threw up in my mouth saying all of that. Justin Tindall again in Dallas, thought Luka was an inefficient player, Now feel he's just a chucker. He's an awful three-point shooter, just jacks up three after three. Luka, you aren't Steph. I mean, look. I'm just pulling up Luka's stats. And he has followed the unfortunate trend of forgetting how to shoot three-pointers when he gets to the Lakers, which makes sense for an organization that just refuses to employ a shooting coach. But anyway, let's look at Luka's three-point shooting percentages over the course of his career. So his rookie season, he shot 32.7%. on seven attempts per game. His second season, he actually got worse and shot 6% on nine attempts from three-point range per game. From there on out, though, he's been solid to really bleeping good. So from, you know, his third season, he shot 35%, which is solid, on 8.3 attempts per game. Next season, 35.3% on 8.8 attempts per game. The season after that, he shot 34.2%, which is you're nearing the Mendoza line at that point, on 8.2 attempts per game. The next season, when he was like incredible, finished top three in MVP voting, In 2023-2024, he shot 38.2% from three on 10.6 attempts per game. Following season after that, he combined for 36.8 percent from 3-point range on 9.6 attempts per game between his time in Dallas and LA. This season, he has slid all the way down to 33.7% from three on 10.2 attempts per game. And that is just an inefficient basketball player from 3-point range. Now, he makes up for it by getting to the free throw line as frequently as he does. He makes up for it because he's a special passer as well. But when the engine of your offense is that inefficient from 3-point range, and continues to shoot as much as he does from 3-point range, it just hurts. It's just it's not an effective approach to basketball. Now, it's tough because on one hand you're like, Luka, trust your teammates, but then he passes the ball and it's like, fuck, it's Marcus Smart. You know, like Luka, trust your teammates. Ah, all right. Please, Vando, make this one wide open. Nope, didn't happen. You know, like it's this is where talking about basketball is difficult, because it's not as simple as if Luka shoots fewer 3-pointers, maybe that means one extra 3-pointer for Austin per game. But it's not. And also, by the way, Austin isn't the kind of 3-point shooter that we think he is, too, right? Well, maybe if Luka shoots one fewer 3-pointer per game, or two fewer 3-pointers per game, maybe that's two other efficient shots, but it's not necessarily that cut and dry. Sometimes, and this is basically what the Lakers have been doing internally this year, sometimes you just have to hope that the guy who has shot better than this over the course of most of his career, you know, like you hope at some point that this guy turns it around. I don't blame them for thinking that way. Shit, that's how we felt about Kobe all the time. You know, it was like, all right, Kobe, you're 1 for 10. How's number 11 going to go? You know, and I still felt better about Kobe taking that 11th jumper than I felt about like Smush Parker taking a jumper. So it's a difficult thing to try to analyze here. I look flat out, Luka needs to be a better 3-point shooter. And the Lakers would greatly benefit from Luka being a better 3-point shooter. But I don't really know what the solution here would be, right? Like, how do you tell this dude, all right, hey, man, shoot fewer threes. Okay, I'll shoot fewer threes. Here's this pass. Please, Jackson Hayes, make that 7-foot floater. I don't know. It's you're just as likely to, you know, have Luka pass out of that 3-pointer and have, you know, the shot that results in that possession be like a Jake LaRavia 3-pointer, which he hasn't been very good from 3-point range this year. You're just as likely with that being the outcome of the possession than you are LeBron or Austin getting a good shot out of the possession. It's just it's kind of a coin flip. So ideally, Luka keeps shooting him and eventually has the progression to the mean. But if he doesn't, then I sincerely do not know what the solution to that problem would be. All right. Next one here. Taman Singh Humultani 4441 writes, Lakers should go for Sam Presti this summer, move on from Genie, get good role players, and don't go for Giannis. He's 32. Go for Ant in a couple of years. Much like my response to the previous question is like, that's a lot easier said than done, right? Like, you know, I think it's altogether possible, if not probable, that the Lakers were only sold when they were by Mark Walter agreeing to allow Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka and the Rambai and Tim Harris and that entire group of that entire inner circle to stay on for 5 years. Like I would probably
say that's probably likelier than not. And like, as that is probably the case, chances are it's going to be really difficult to get Sam Presti. Now, what I will say, on the Sam Presti front is that whenever his contract is up, and I don't know that off the top of my head, whenever Sam Presti's contract is up, I do think that, you know, between now and then, there's going to be some back channeling done. There are going to be conversations that take place. And I would say, a decent chance that Mark Walter and, you know, Guggenheim and AG and his entire group of people are going to start doing their homework on whatever they have to do to get Sam Presti at least for a formal interview. I truly do not know. I'll just Google while I'm sitting here. Sam Presti contract. These things aren't as readily available as player contracts would be. Let's see. Yeah, so there's just basically no information on it. And I'll dig around and I'll see what's going on there. But I do think that that would be the first step that Mark Walter would typically take, is like, all right, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get the best basketball mind out there, hand them the keys and say, you have this blank check for yourself. And then you also have this blank check to fill out this organization however you want to fill it out. You want this training staff? Cool. You want this analytics department? Cool. You want this video department? Cool. You want this social media department? Cool. You want a PR group that will shut up idiots like that Anthony Irwin guy over there? Cool. You got that too. like, you know, the Lakers would be wise to approach, you know, all right, so they'll see how things go for the rest of this season. They'll see how things go this upcoming summer and that transaction window there, where there is no excuse for Rob Pelinka to not build a roster that meets the expectations of Luka Doncic in his prime. And, you know, coming out of that, Mark Walter will make his decisions, or start to make his decisions, on this current front office. He'll start doing his homework on what it would take to fill out, you know, the Monstar front office that he employed with the Dodgers when he took them over. And we'll see how long that takes, what that looks like, and all of that good stuff. But we're probably, you know, a little ways removed from all that. As far as, like, you know, Gopher Ant, I mean, it'd be fun. We've taken the city of LA has taken more from Minnesota in the past, I guess. I don't know. That was a mean thing to say. I'm going to go to bed. I have a lot of friends in Minnesota. I'm going to pay for that one. That I'm going to get a lot of texts in the morning for that one. All right. I'm going to cut this one somewhat short here tonight, because tomorrow I am going to be recording an episode of The Hook with Pete. We're going to be talking about the basketball that the Lakers have been playing recently. We'll be talking about the basketball that we would like to see the Lakers play when Austin comes back. We will talk about this ESPN article about the Bus family and Jeannie Buss and LeBron and all that stuff. It'll be a loaded episode tomorrow that we'll be recording at a little bit earlier than we normally do. I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow to hopefully clear up these sinuses, and allergies and all that stuff. And until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.